Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. The program is a project of Action for Healthy Communities and is provided in collaboration with KCBX and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Join Chris Kington Barker today as she speaks with Central Coast legal experts Kate Lee, an attorney with Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County, and Sadie Weller, an attorney with San Luis Obispo Legal Assistance Foundation, as they discuss avenues available for rent and mortgage relief as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today between 1 and 2 p.m. Call in, be part of the discussion at 805-549-8855 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Over to you, Chris.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rachel. Recently released research about the impact of COVID-19 reports that the United States may be facing one of the most severe housing crises in its history. According to the latest analysis of weekly U.S. Census data, as federal, state, and local protections and resources expire in the absence of robust and swift intervention, an estimated 30 to 40 million people in America could be at risk of eviction in the next several months. Many property owners who lack the credit or financial ability to cover rental payments, arrears, will struggle to pay their mortgages and property taxes and maintain properties. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, researchers, academics, and advocates have conducted continuous analysis of the effect of public health crisis and economic depression on renters in the housing market. Multiple studies have quantified the effect of COVID-19 related job loss and the economic hardship on renters' ability to pay rent during the epidemic. While the methodologies have differed, these analyses coverage on a dire prediction. If conditions do not change, 29 to 43% of renter households could be at risk of eviction by the end of the year. I'm joined today by two experts who are going to be speaking to us and answer your questions about this widespread and potentially critical topic. Kate Lee, I'm going to start with you. As a staff attorney for the Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County, can you talk a little bit about what your role is there and also what the Legal Aid Foundation, what their role is in the community with regard to the housing market?
Sure. Well, thank you first, Chris, for having me. I'm really pleased to be here and talk about such an important topic. My organization, the Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County. We're a nonprofit law firm, and we help people in crisis with critical civil legal issues. So a lot of people know the Miranda warnings, right? You have a right to an attorney. If you can't afford one, one will be provided to you, but that's only an entitlement in a criminal case. So for critical civil issues, if you can't afford an attorney, you don't have one given to you. So we enter, those of us who are legal aid advocates, to try to fill that gap for people who need lawyers in important civil cases and can't afford one. And I handle our consumer protection program, which encompasses things like fraud, financial abuse, and foreclosure prevention, which is what I'm going to be talking about today to help homeowners that are struggling.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Sadie Weller, housing attorney for the San Luis Obispo Legal Assistance Foundation. Can you talk a little bit about your role there and then also San Luis Obispo Legal Assistance Foundation, what its role is for San Luis County?
Yes, thank you. I like you, and I'm glad to be here today to talk about these really important issues. Yeah, my name is Sadie Weller, and I am a staff attorney at Slo Legal Assistance Foundation. I work primarily in housing law, so landlord-tenant eviction law. We have different attorneys in our office who also practice similar areas as Kate's office. We do foreclosure prevention and other civil areas. We do guardianships, conservatorships, elder abuse, some consumer law and government benefits as well for income or age eligible residents of Slo County.
So I'll just kind of put this question out to either of you or both of you. So how, if people are listening today and find that this is a service that they need and that they could not afford otherwise, how would they access your services in San Luis Obispo or Santa Barbara County?
So I can start. We have a specific hotline for foreclosure relief. Okay. So if you are a homeowner who's struggling, you can call this phone number, 805-364-0192. And if you're a resident of Santa Barbara, San Benito, Monterey, and Ventura counties, we can help struggling homeowners who need assistance with foreclosure prevention. So you can call that phone number. If you want assistance with other areas that we handle, like eviction, domestic violence, other consumer protection issues, and you're a resident of Santa Barbara County only, you can call one of our offices. We have offices in Santa Barbara, Lompoc, and Santa Maria. And the best way to find the phone numbers is either to Google us or go to our website, lafsbc.org.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so for us, we just, Slow Legal Assistance Foundation, we have, basically we have one phone number you can call. And again, like with Kate, so you just Google either Slow Laugh, S-L-O-L-A-F, or Slow Legal Assistance Foundation. And a staff member in our office, you know, will take kind of the facts of your case and assign it to an attorney if it's something we can help out with. So yeah, if you are facing a civil issue in kind of the areas that we practice, then that's how you would go about that route.
In this time of COVID, are you making appointments with people? Are you having to do things virtually? How are you handling this right now?
So I can speak for us at Legal Aid of Santa Barbara County. We're still working remotely. Okay. So we're trying to do everything by phone and creative things with technology. Where our clients have struggles and accessing technology to get documents to us or things like that, then we will do a distance meeting at our office. Or, you know, I've found creative ways to get documents to clients. So generally remotely, but where necessary, we are meeting in person.
So you find a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sadie?
Yeah, same. So we are still working remotely, meeting clients either on the phone or through Zoom. And again, kind of, if that's not a possibility for them, then make it work. I've met outside on the benches with clients wearing masks, sitting 6 feet apart, doing whatever we can to make sure that they, that their needs are being met in any way that we can.
When you look at it from a local perspective, what are your biggest concerns right now? I did an intro about on a broad U.S. scale. What are you seeing on a Central Coast scale that concerns you?
So I think, and I probably have similar concerns as Sadie, that there are these protections out there for people struggling to make their housing payments, but a lot of them expire, at least with respect to homeowners that I'll talk about, at the end of this year or will be expiring next year. And so my concern is what happens when those protections end. Will we see just massive foreclosures in our community?
Do you want to talk about what those are right now? Okay.
What a foreclosure is?
Well, first, yeah, what is a foreclosure?
A great way to start. So just to back up, starting with the mortgage. So most people, when you purchase a home, you don't pay in all cash. Instead, you take out a loan to buy it. And that loan is secured by the home. And foreclosure at its most basic is a legal process that can be initiated when the homeowner doesn't make the mortgage payments. So this process lets the mortgage company, in essence, sell the home to get its money back from the proceeds of the sale.
So if if you're only making a partial payment of what you agreed to pay on a monthly basis, will that keep you out of foreclosure?
No, it will not. So yes, so that's a good thing to a good question that sometimes is a misconception that people think just because they're sending in some money, that means that they're protected from foreclosure. And that's not the case, unfortunately.
Okay. So what have the protections been up so far that have protected people from losing shelter over their heads?
So there are, the main protection was enacted by the CARES Act earlier this year by Congress. So I guess two caveats before I explain what those protections are. The first is that I'm only going to be talking about protections for homeowners residing in their home. There may be different rules if it's an investment property. And also the CARES Act passed only applies to what are called federally backed mortgages, which is about 70% of all loans out there. So if your mortgage is with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, the VA, or the USDA, then it would be protected. If your mortgage is not with any of those entities, unfortunately, right now, there are no legal mandates for you. So
what would be an example of a loan that is with, that is outside of those entities?
Like a private loan. And a lot of people don't know actually who their loan is with, because your loan could also be sold. Yeah. You could get your loan with Wells Fargo when you buy your home, and then it's actually with, they sell it to another entity. So there are ways to look up who owns your loan now. If probably the best way, there are special websites, the best way is to just Google, you know, loan lookup tools. And there are a few websites out there to see who has your loan. And hopefully it's one of these 70% of the market loans that are protected because they're federally backed by the relief that I can talk more about, Chris, if you'd like.
Okay. All right. And then you said there was something else that you needed to talk as a backstory about?
No, I think those were the two. So the two main things are homeowners living in the residence and federally backed mortgages. So if you're both of those actually, then there are these protections out there.
Okay. All right. And the protections do what?
So the first main protection is what's called forbearance, which that is just a right that you can ask of your mortgage company to pause your mortgage payments. And so they have to do this at your request, and they can't require any additional documentation as long as you say that you're experiencing a COVID-related hardship. And you're entitled to 180 days of this pause of forbearance, and then an additional 180 days if after that first period you're still experiencing a hardship. So that's almost an entire year that you're entitled to of a pause on your mortgage payments, and it won't impact your credit. There are no late fees or penalties while you're in forbearance, and they can't foreclose on you during this time. An important thing to know, though, is this is not loan forgiveness. So what happens to that arrearage, kind of those back payments, will depend upon your circumstances, which I'm happy to talk a little more about if you'd like. But just know that I think I've heard out there from clients that people don't want to go into forbearance because they're afraid there's going to be a lump sum payment.
Right.
After the period ends, and every agency that I just listed under the federally backed mortgages has come out and said, as long as you were current before you went into forbearance, you do not have to worry about having to pay a lump sum payment.
Okay. And this period started, did it start in April or March?
It started when the CARES Act was passed, enacted. Which I believe... I believe it was April. Or the end of March. I think it may have been the end of March.
Okay. So that is coming up rather quickly.
So the initial, it depends upon the agency of when the right expires to request this initial forbearance. But some agencies, it does expire at the end of this year. So it's really important for people, if you are a homeowner struggling and you think forbearance may benefit you, to reach out to your mortgage company as soon as possible.
Now, you mentioned that this is for homeowners who are living in the home, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So is there anything for people that are homeowners that they have other people who are living in the home and renting the home for them from them?
So this, these, if you're residing in the home, even if you are renting, say, a bedroom, but you're living in the home yourself, these protections would apply. I'm not quite sure if the protections apply to investment properties, just because those aren't the types of cases that we take at Legal Aid, because we're trying to help people stay housed. But that is something, if you do have an investment property, to look into to see if forbearance may be an option for you as well.
Okay. And Sadie, are you handling any cases where the owner is not living in the home? Maybe they're also suffering, and so is the renter that cannot pay the rent?
So do you mean in terms of foreclosure prevention as well?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So we do, that is kind of a separate program. I mostly work on the tenancy side, but we do have also a foreclosure prevention component. Where, yeah, basically our goal is to, you know, help seniors specifically maintain their housing. So it generally will be owner-occupied housing.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay. And can you talk a little bit about housing for people that are renting?
Yeah. So I guess some of the main issues is since the declaration of the COVID-19 emergency, there's been so many different laws at every level, at the local level, state, national level, and I think there's just a lot of confusion about what is the current state of eviction law. You know, things have expired and then new laws have been set up and then those deadlines are coming up. So I think that has just been confusing for people to keep up with, specifically in Slo County. Another issue is, you know, if people are being, you know, legally evicted, there's such a lack of affordable housing here. There's high rent. People who have maybe been paying under market for a while are now being forced to find housing that they just can't afford because of the reality of our housing market. So those are some of the local issues that I'm seeing that are really concerning.
What, you know, for people that are renting, there are some questions that come up that I've heard from individuals, and I think some of the preparation stuff that you gave me for today's show spoke to it as well. You know, for people that are in a home, they cannot pay all of the rent, or they can only pay some, and you know, they're struggling. You know, can they be evicted right now?
So the answer is it's complicated. There are two main laws that could possibly protect tenants who can't pay rent right now. One of them is AB Assembly Bill 3088, which is known as the Tenant, Homeowner, and Small Landlord Relief and Stabilization Act of 2020, that went into effect at the end of August of this year. That has basically two components, but in terms of non-payment, if a tenant cannot pay their rent because of a COVID-19 related financial hardship, there are protections available to them. They have to notify their landlord. If a tenant gets served with a notice to pay rent, their landlord is obligated to give them 15 days to either provide rent or to submit back to the landlord a declaration attesting to their hardship. And then that the tenant can never be evicted for rent that's unpaid if the reason for non-payment was because of COVID-19. And the other, there are a few, you know, caveats to that, but that's basically, that's basically that state law, and that applies to rent that will be due, that was due from March 1st of 2020 through the end of January of 2021. And the other one is the CDC, the federal eviction moratorium, that also puts, you know, prohibits evictions for non-payment of rent from September of this year through December 31st of 2020. That one is a little bit different. The financial hardship that, well, the tenant does have to sign a declaration saying that they have a financial hardship, but it does not actually have to be related to COVID. The purpose of this moratorium, you know, is to prevent the spread of COVID-19, which, you know, studies have been shown forcing people out of their homes into congregate living facilities onto the streets. So that is that's causing greater numbers of COVID cases and COVID deaths. So that's kind of the purpose of the CDC moratorium. So yeah, that one only extends through the end of December, but if a tenant has experienced a financial hardship and can also meet the other criteria, there's an income cap for that one, then they could also avail themselves of those protections. But in either of these laws, the CDC moratorium or AB 3088, the tenant has to notify the landlord of the hardship, the financial hardship, and basically sign a declaration under penalty of perjury.
So what is that process then when you say notify? Is that a phone call? They send them an email? They, you know, drop a note on their door? What does notify look like?
Right. So it's different for both of them, but both of them basically will involve a signed notice. So under AB 3088, any landlord who is serving a tenant with a notice to pay rent, you know, say their tenant didn't pay rent and it becomes the middle of the month, the rent was due, landlord serves them with a notice to pay. Before this law, the landlord would just have to give them 3 days to pay. Under this new law, in any residential tenancy, the landlord has to give them a 15-day notice to pay the rent, and the landlord has to give them a blank copy of the financial hardship declaration. And so for every month that a tenant cannot pay rent because of COVID-19, every single time they're given this 15-day notice, they have to submit a new declaration of hardship saying, look, I'm still unemployed because of COVID, or my business is losing business because of COVID. They have to submit that every time they get the notice in order to avail themselves of these protections. So yeah, that one is a writing.
And that's a specific form? The notice is in a specific format?
There's specific language that California, I believe Governor Newsom's office put out a sample letter that landlords can use. But it basically has, it just says I lost my income because of X, Y reasons related to COVID, and then they sign it under penalty of perjury.
Okay, so it does not need to be notarized?
It does not, no.
Okay.
And for that one, for AB 3088, tenants are not required to provide proof of their income or of their loss of income unless their landlord has, you know, actual evidence that their tenant is high income.
Okay.
Yeah. And then for the CDC moratorium, the landlord does not have a duty to tell their tenants about that moratorium. So it's important that if there are tenants out there who believe that they are protected by this, they have to submit and file it with the court a declaration of financial hardship as well. It doesn't have to be a specific form so long as the requirements, there's five criteria of the CDC moratorium, so long as the five criteria are attested to and signed again under penalty of perjury, then the landlord cannot take any action to evict that tenant.
How does an individual file with the court?
That's a good question. So that also will apply to many different stages of the eviction process. Right now, the Slo County courts do not have open filing windows. They do have drop boxes at the San Luis Obispo Court location. And they also there's also the availability of e-filing, which people can take advantage of.
And what is the, if someone was looking up that form online to do a electronic filing by email, what would it be called?
You mean to file something online?
Mm-hmm.
So if they go to slowcourts.net, there's actually a pretty robust self-help tutorials on that website about e-filing. If you go to the self-help eviction tab, they, I believe, will have copies of those declarations. Otherwise, our office has those available as well. But yeah, the court's website does have information about online case filing.
Okay. And while we're on this, before we go to a break, another question. If a renter is not paying their rent, or they're only paying a portion of it, can the landlord withhold repairs and maintenance because they're not obligated if they're not getting their money?
No. So during this whole, during a tenancy, a tenant never loses their rights to what's called habitable premises. The tenant always has the right to certain basic standards of living, adequate heating, running water, weatherproof doors, windows, things like that that make a unit habitable. That right does not go away during a tenancy. Of course, during a pandemic, we always advise tenants that they do have the rights to demand repairs, but that landlords, property managers, tenants should also always comply with public health orders when they're making those repairs, minimizing the amount of people involved, wearing masks, things like that.
If I'm renting a unit and it's inclusive of a refrigerator and the refrigerator breaks down, do I, as the landlord, need to replace that?
So there's actually no, in California, there's no duty for landlords to provide an appliance such as a refrigerator. And there's also no ongoing duty for them to repair it or to replace it. The landlord always has the duty to, like I said, keep the premises in a habitable condition. And so long as the problem wasn't caused by the tenant, the landlord has to make those repairs.
Okay. So if the heating, the air conditioning, whatever that is, goes out, then they would need to repair that.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And we're going to take a quick break and then come back, because I want to talk about in more detail what happens with mortgages, mortgage relief, and also about what happens during foreclosure, what that looks like, what the steps are, what people can do, how they can avoid some things, or if they can avoid some things. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Rachel, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This is listener-supported public radio, KCBX, serving the Central Coast from Salinas to Ventura. Thanks for tuning in for Central Coast Voices today. If you have questions you want to have answered, you can send them to us at voices@kcbx.org or call them in at 805-549-8855. Show's going to continue in just a moment. We're back with Central Coast Voices.
Our discussion about the COVID-19 eviction crisis and eviction and mortgage relief. The expert voices with me today are Kate Lee, staff attorney with Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County, and Sadie Wheeler, housing attorney with San Luis Obispo Legal Assistance Foundation. We invite you to be part of today's discussion with your comments and questions, and you can get them to us by calling us at 805-549-8855, or you can email us at voices@kcbx.org. And I'm going to go ahead and if we can kind of talk more about the foreclosure process. And Kate, I'm going to go back to you on this one. You know, what is the process with foreclosure? If someone is not able to make their payments, can the bank take their house back? Can they start that process?
So, in general, yes, there is currently a foreclosure moratorium. If you have one of those loans, like I talked about, that are federally backed. So depending upon the agency, the foreclosure moratorium either expires at the end of this year, or Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac just announced that they're extending it to the end of January 31st. There is that moratorium in place, which pauses any foreclosure action, even if you're behind on payments.
Okay.
But assuming that foreclosure moratorium expires, then yes, if you're behind on your mortgage payments, the mortgage company can start the foreclosure process. In California, the process is non-judicial. So unlike what Sadie just covered for tenants, if you don't pay your rent, if you don't pay your mortgage company doesn't have to go to court. They just have a couple, you know, a few legal requirements that they have to comply with, that is paperwork, essentially, but you will not be taken to court for foreclosure. They'll reach out to you to discuss their options that to potentially save the home, and then there's a specific formal process that's a timeline that they have to, you know, comply with until they can sell the home. But essentially, yes, if you don't make your payments, they can take your home and sell it.
Now, do they have to prove that you received and read the paperwork?
So they have to, it depends upon, there are specific notices that they have to mail by certified mail, mm-hmm. but they don't, basically it's not a defense if you just say you didn't open your mail. Never received it, right. Yeah. And so a lot of people come to me and they have all this unopened mail and they have just kind of been ignoring the problem because it's so stressful. Yeah. And then I open with them the mail, and the mail shows that their home is scheduled to be sold in foreclosure in that month or in a week or tomorrow, has happened to me as well. So it's really important, because you're not going to get served like with a process server, court paperwork, all the important documents to avoid foreclosure are going to come to you in the mail.
And when you're talking about a house being sold in foreclosure, that means it goes to auction.
Right.
And, you know, that people's houses get sold at an auction for a pittance of probably what the people who are losing their homes actually owe on it.
Right. So any equity that you have in the home, you're not going to be able to protect that equity in a foreclosure sale as much as, you know, a market sale. That's right.
Right. And when you say protect the equity in it, when a home is sold at an auction, the amount of money they get out of the auction is what is taken off of the balance of your loan, correct?
Right. Yes. Plus a lot of fees, costs of the foreclosure, costs of the attorney's fees, the property inspection. So it's not just the principal balance of the loan, but adding lots of costs on top of them.
And then after they deduct that, what happens to the balance of what you owed and couldn't pay?
So if you're saying if the sale price at auction isn't enough to pay off your mortgage?
Yeah.
Okay, great question. In California, there is a law that actually basically says that that's it. That's all the mortgage company can do. So they can't then come after you for the remaining balance of the loan in court, unlike some loans, like car loans, for instance. Mm-hmm. So that would be the end of the road, at least with respect to trying to collect from you on your mortgage.
Okay. So what is the advice that you give to people if you have people that are calling you like at the last minute or after they've been receiving these hordes of mail that look ominous, but they don't want to? What is your advice to people that they can't make the payments? They don't know what to do. What should they do?
Yeah, so it's so fact specific, but my general of what their options really are, because it depends upon the value of their home, right? The loan balance, their income, whether they will be able to get back on their feet. But in general, I always stress to seek help early in the process. Don't wait until you're in formal foreclosure or your home's about to be sold to get help. So open your mail, reach out to your mortgage company to try to see what options are available. And then obviously reach out to us. This is something that I help people with every day. And the earlier in the process, the easier my job is too, to try to save the home and get people out of foreclosure.
What kind of options do mortgage companies work with people around? I mean, what if someone isn't able to pay their mortgage, can they assume that there's really no option? Or is there something, like sometimes credit card companies will lower an interest rate or take no payment for that month? What is the mortgage company willing or able to do for people who ask?
So there are a lot of options, and the great thing about the CARES Act is, and these agencies have protected borrowers who have these federally backed mortgages where there's actual specific relief that they are entitled to if they've faced a COVID-related hardship. So for instance, say you went into a forbearance plan and so you had your mortgage payments paused for some period of time. There are specific guidelines for the agency that your loan is with and how you can be evaluated in terms of how to pay back that arrearage. So the rules depend upon the agency, but for instance, if your loan is with the FHA, there's something called a partial claim, which actually the FHA will pay the arrearage, advance the amount to bring your loan current. So they'll pay the mortgage company. And then that acts as like a silent second interest-free mortgage that you only have to pay back if you refi or you sell the home. There are loan modifications, which a lot of people are familiar with from the mortgage crisis. But there are special terms for these COVID-related loan modifications. You know, they'll add the arrears to the principal, extend the loan term. You may be entitled to a payment deferral, like putting the arrears at the end of the loan. And so they'll just allow you to start resuming your regular payment. So there are a ton of options out there. And it's really important to reach out to your mortgage company. And if you're struggling, obviously reach out to us, because there was a survey done in August where half of homeowners did not know any of their options.
Yeah.
And the mortgage company usually, at least in my experience, is not going to perfectly put all of your options on a platter for you. You really have to empower yourself with the information and demand these options that you're entitled to.
Yeah, absolutely. And advocate for yourself. And like you said, the earlier you do that, the better, rather than getting into a hole. And it's humbling for people to have to make these phone calls, especially when they're overwhelmed anyway. And if people are sick, if they've gotten COVID, if they're overwhelmed with having children at home, if they're trying to homeschool and trying to work from home and deal with all of this at the same time, it's a lot. But it's something that you can offer some advice on walking through, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's exactly why our program exists. It's because so many people, especially right now, are really struggling just to stay afloat. And we at least are there to alleviate hopefully some of that burden, help guide them through the process, and help them maintain their housing.
Sadie, is there a misunderstanding about, you know, who your organization is available to assist?
I specifically work in housing law. Uh-huh. We represent tenants who are, you know, facing eviction if they are income eligible. We also can help landlords who live in the home with the tenant, and if the tenant is threatening their housing and, you know, things like elder abuse, or if the tenant is not paying rent and that's threatening the senior landlord's ability to pay their mortgage, where then their housing would be at risk. So our goal at Slow Laugh is to maintain safe housing for income and age eligible residents. So those are the situations that we would work
and
with.
In order for people to be age eligible or eligible for services through Slow Laugh, what are the requirements for that?
So our housing, I'm not great at answering these questions. This is usually our intake staff, but I believe our age cutoff or age eligibility is 60. And I honestly, I'm not sure what the income is. I could figure that out if people have questions, but I don't know.
Okay, great. They probably could call and find out or go to the website.
Yes. Our intake coordinators could definitely answer those questions.
Okay. And Kate, how about for your organization?
So it's not a concrete cutoff. It depends upon the program that you're applying to. So some have very strict income guidelines, like if you're applying for eviction defense help. For my program that I'm speaking about today, the foreclosure prevention, there is no strict income threshold. You do have to be a resident of either Santa Barbara, San Benito, Monterey, or Ventura County. Okay. And if you're in SLO County, SLO Laugh handles the foreclosure prevention component. But basically, you would call, and we do require income information, but there is no strict guideline.
Okay.
Cut off.
Okay. With regard to for individuals for Slow Laugh who are calling in, how do you direct them? When should they be contacting Sadie? Is there a period of time in which they should, okay, now's the time to call for assistance?
Right away.
Okay, so as soon as they're unable to make their first, you know, full payment or...
So most of the time our clients will call us after they've received an eviction notice, or sometimes not until after they've received the unlawful detainer eviction complaint, the lawsuit that's been filed in the court. The earlier the better. These cases, especially if it's already been filed with the courts, these cases are summary proceedings. They move very quickly. Once you get served with the complaint, you only have 5 court days to respond. And then in terms of just the notice, the different eviction protections in place right now are triggered at the notice stage. So if you get an eviction notice, you should definitely be reaching out to an attorney as soon as possible, just to let you know, or so that we can look at what your rights are, what protections are available to you. And even at that point, sometimes start negotiating with the landlord before an eviction is even filed. Because one thing to keep in mind is, eviction judgments, if it goes through the whole court process and an eviction judgment is entered against you, that's going to affect, it could affect your credit. It will likely affect your ability to find housing in the future. So a lot of times we want to avoid those judgments.
Talk a little bit about if someone does have a home go into foreclosure, are they able, Kate, to stop that process? If it starts down that path, is there a way to interrupt that process, or is that a train that's going to stay on that track and keep going?
There definitely are options that can stop that train, and that's what I try to do. Like I said before, the options really diminish the closer you get to the sale, but there are certainly, because basically the formal process of foreclosure starts when something called a notice of default is recorded. And then the mortgage company has to wait 90 days minimum until they can record the next document, the notice of sale, which they then can sell your home after at earliest 21 days after that. So that's like a little less than a 4 month period. So yes, during that 4 months, or even before they've even recorded those documents, I have, on behalf of my clients and other homeowners, can, if they do this themselves, definitely contact their mortgage company to get one of these potentially, you know, relief options available, which would totally halt the foreclosure. If you get a loan modification, if you get approved for one of these programs that you're eligible for, then that completely stops the foreclosure process.
In general, how quickly can that sale take place during the foreclosure after that notice of sale?
Once the notice of sale...
Do they generally sell them pretty quickly? Or because I often see homes sitting around in foreclosure for months and even a year.
Yeah, it's a great question. I've seen both. I've seen them act really quickly to the day that they can sell it, they will. And then I've seen them continue to extend and extend and keep kind of kicking the can. I generally think this may depend upon, I mean, a theory of mine is that it may depend upon the equity in the home, if they're maybe waiting for the equity to go back up. But that's just a theory. I wish I could see into the minds of these mortgage companies, but yeah. I have seen both where they'll extend it and extend it or sell it immediately when they can.
I'm Chris Kington Barker with you on Central Coast Voices, KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you just recently joined, my guests are Kate Lee, staff attorney with Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County, Sadie Weller, housing attorney with San Luis Obispo Legal Assistance Foundation. We invite your questions, and you can probably for the next 10 minutes, if you want to call and ask a question or make a comment, you can send that to us at voices@kcbx.org or call us at 805-549-8855. I'm going to open it up to you guys and see what things you really want to emphasize, or you want to, their common questions or common things that are misunderstood that we haven't talked about or gotten to. And Sadie, I'm going to go back to you and start with you here.
Yeah, definitely. Like I was mentioning earlier, I think there's just a lot of confusion, a lot of misunderstanding about what the current state of eviction law is in the country, in California, and on the Central Coast. So hopefully I was able to give some broad strokes of that. Of course, if you do receive an eviction notice, an eviction lawsuit, you should immediately contact an attorney to see if any of these protections are available to you. If you're a tenant and you can't pay rent because of COVID-19, again, there are protections available to you. You just have to make sure you get that declaration to your landlord. And I did want to kind of specify a little bit more about what this California law AB 3088 looks like in terms of the non-payment of rent. So for rent that was due, it kind of breaks it up into two distinct periods. So for rent that was due between March of 2020 and August 30th of 2020, if you couldn't pay rent during those months because of a COVID-19 hardship and you tell your landlord that in that writing, your landlord can never evict you for that unpaid rent. And then the second period would be from September 1st, 2020 through the end of January 2021. Again, if you can't pay all of your rent because of COVID-19 and you tell your landlord and you pay 25% of the total rent due for that 5-month period by January 31st, 2021, your landlord can also never evict you for that unpaid rent. However, it is important to note also that neither this law, any of our local moratoria, or the state or the federal CDC order provides any sort of rent relief or rent forgiveness. In California, for that unpaid rent due to COVID-19 hardship, that will just be converted into regular consumer debt that landlords can then sue for in small claims court starting in March of 2021. So if you can pay rent, you definitely should. That rent is never going to be forgiven, but there are eviction protections available. Also, Kate was mentioning that in California, it's a non-judicial foreclosure state. So on the contrary, evictions, the landlord must go through the lawful process, and that always starts with a written eviction notice. And there's different requirements for those notice depending on how long you've been there, what the reason for the eviction is for, all those things, which is why it's important to contact an attorney as soon as you get a notice. And I also just wanted to say that landlords cannot use what's called self-help eviction. Landlords cannot lock you out. They can't change the locks. They can't turn off the utilities to try to get you to move out. All of those things are illegal. In your rights as a tenant in terms of asking for repairs, proper notice of legal rent increases, all of the rights as a tenant are not suspended during this period. And it's important that that tenants know that.
If someone were to have a landlord that did that, who would they notify?
If that? A landlord, like an illegal lockout, if they change the locks. Mm-hmm. So it's not only exposes the landlords to criminal or to civil penalties, but it's also a crime. So I always recommend that the tenant call the police, file a report. Most of the time the police will not make the landlord allow reentry, but at least the report is made. And then also the tenant should immediately contact an attorney. There are lawsuits and restraining orders that can be asked of the court to get the tenant back into their home. But obviously the quicker, the better, especially right now, there's so much backlog in the courts. That's not always immediate, but definitely file a police report and contact an attorney. But okay. Also, I did want to note that tenants have the right to get back into their property. Like they can call a locksmith. They have the right to get back in if they're illegally locked out.
Okay. Thank you. And Kate, we have about 2 minutes.
I said everything I think I wanted to say. The thing to stress again is to get help early. Talk to your mortgage company early. Obviously, call us if you want help with that. And like I mentioned before, where people tend to not open their mail, I think what I wanted to note is one of the reasons why is also because once the formal foreclosure process starts and the notice of default is recorded, that's public. And so usually the homeowners get flooded with mail from all types of people claiming to want to get them out of foreclosure, help them, notices that look like they're official, but they're actually from someone trying to solicit your business. So one thing I wanted to point out is be really careful about scammers.
Yeah.
People should not be guaranteeing that they will save your home. Also, it's illegal to take upfront fees to rescue your home in California. So that's another really important thing to point out in our community is please be wary of people who approach you with these solicitations claiming that they can save your home.
Yeah. And I wanted to reiterate one thing, and we'll probably do another show at some point to talk about that. But what you were saying, Sadie, is that the relief for the landlords in this, because this is something that I hear about from people too, is, well, wait a minute, you know, I can't, you know, I can't evict somebody, but at the same time, I can't get my money. What they can do is that it's not totally forgiven. They can't evict, but they do have to go to small claims court, and the likelihood that they're going to get that money is pretty slim in some cases. So everybody's suffering here, landlords and their renters and homeowners. So thank you so much today for having this conversation. I really appreciate both of you. I want to thank my guests for today, Kate Lee, staff attorney with Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County, Sadie Weller, housing attorney with San Luis Obispo Legal Assistance Foundation. Next week, please join Fred Monroe as he speaks with Dr. Penny Borenstein, Slo County public health officer and local COVID-19 survivors, as concerns and cases continue to rise through the Central Coast. Central Coast Voices has been made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us today.
For tuning in for Central Coast Voices today. This show will be available to listen to later on our website, kcbx.org. You can hear any of our local shows anytime and stream on demand from kcbx.org. Find us on social media at kcbxfm. Stay with us.